Hey guys, welcome to Hooked on Crime Pod, the podcast where we talk about hooks and crooks. This is the fourth and last episode of our Monsters in the Dark series, where I've spent the last few episodes talking about just evil people. I don't even want to call them people, that have done things on the dark web and hurt other people. So, This is the last person that I'm going to talk about with this series. I really appreciate all of the support that I've gotten through all of this. It's been really trying. It's definitely affected my mental health. Obviously, it's nothing compared to what the actual victims of the crimes have went through. But one thing people don't really understand is when you are looking up such dark things, especially somebody who has like depressive and anxiety disorders, somebody, you know, that same person looking up all of this dark stuff, it can get to you. And so doing this series is definitely, it's gotten to me. And I just thank you again for all the support and the love. And, you know, again, as other episodes, trigger warning, sexual abuse, it just all the bad shit, honestly. And if you need to skip this one, go ahead. Thank you for listening. And here we go. So, Richard William Huckle was born April 1st, 1986. There's not much to say about his childhood. He lived a normal life. It was unassuming. He went to church a lot. He was known as a quiet loner who, you know, always surrounded himself with kids. Obviously, you can kind of see where that's going. When he was 16, he went to school for a month in Namibia. Namibia. Yes, that's how you say it. I'm sorry, y'all. My handwriting is so bad, I can't even read it half the time. In 2006, he was 19, and he started volunteering in orphanages and things like that, so that way, he was doing it on his gap year, which I guess a gap year is, when you take a year off between college and high school. It's like a year-long sabbatical, where a lot of people will go out into the world, and, you know, there's a thing called the, Gap Challenge program, with World Challenge, and he went to Malaysia, started volunteering in, orphanages and different things like that. So he always was somebody who would post on social media or different forums he was on, about, you know, his experiences during his time abroad and how he fell in love with the Tamil culture. And I don't remember if I just said, I think I did. He was in Malaysia for his gap year. So, you know, he fell in love with the Tamil culture, and he became involved with the Church of Community. And it only took him a couple of months to learn how to read the Tamil characters. And he started learning how to speak the language. And so, you know, he did all of this in the first 8 months of his stay in Malaysia. He also traveled to Cambodia and Brunei. In 2008, he enrolled in a short teaching course so he could become an English teacher. You know, he got a certificate to teach English as a second language to adults. But instead of working with adults, he moved into a poor community and worked with kids. He knew he'd be welcomed into this community with open arms. And the parents there, they trusted this, you know, Christian, white, educated teacher with their kids. And the reason I bring that up is because in countries like Malaysia, and, you know, all over the Philippines and that kind of area of the world, people who are Western are viewed as, you know, being superior in a way. And I just find that insane. But this is how he was able to get an in with these parents. So, you know, he would offer to teach their kids. He would take the kids out to get ice cream and, you know, different treats and celebrate their birthdays with them. And he loved to take kids to church and he would tutor them. So we're going to go ahead and do our ad and then we will be right back. Hey, hey, y'all. For August and September, our crochet spotlight artist is the Left-Handed Crocheter, a fantastic pattern designer. And I can personally attest to the patterns being well written and well put together because I have over 20 of them. If you would like to check out her patterns, go to lefthandedcrocheter.com, ravelry.com/stores/the-left-handed-crocheter-designs. Search for her on Instagram at lefthandedcrocheter or facebook.com/lefthandedcrocheter. You don't have to be left-handed to make her patterns, but I highly recommend them because they're really, really good. I have over 20 of them myself, and I love all of them. So you guys go check her out. Hey, guys. So we have talked about how picky I am with my hair before. And if you've listened to my ads, you know that Allison Crawford had done my hair for a long time. Well, sadly, Miss Allie moved on. She is no longer cutting hair, but she did put me in touch with someone who made me feel so wonderful. And I still, like, my self-esteem is negative 20 on good days. But when I look in the mirror now, I still am like, ooh, I look pretty cute. And my daughter, Crime Kid, and I both cried when we got our hair done. By her, it's just, she's wonderful. Look for Cara Danielle at The Foilery, which is at 217 West Center Street in Holly Springs, North Carolina. You can go on Instagram at CARA_DANIELE_HAIR. And you can get a hold of her at 919-602-8962. And I 100 out of 10 recommend. So please give her a call today and go get your hair done and you can feel beautiful too. All right, we're back. So Richard actually went to Cambodia at one point, you know, doing his whole teacher shtick thing. And he had access to two young sisters. One was 4 and the other was 6, and he was often left unsupervised with them, and he raped them. He went back in 2007 and he stayed with the same family and worked as a volunteer teacher in their village, and he continued to rape these girls. In 2011, he moved to Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia, and he went to Kuala Lumpur Metropolitan University College. He was studying IT, and he made money as a freelance photographer. Richard always had a love of taking photos. He got his first camera at 17, and it was something that just kind of clicked with him. So he started advertising his services on Facebook, and he was hired to take pictures of kids at birthday parties. And he would offer to take the kids home. On his Facebook photography page, he'd post pics that, you know, of these kids. But some of his friends noticed that the pictures were suggestive because Richard would pose even super young kids to look and act like adult models. One day, the pastor at the church had wanted to know why he was always with kids and where the kids' parents were. Richard said he had the kids, you know, the parents' permission. And the pastor said, you know what, dude, just don't come back without these kids' parents. You know, so Richard stopped going to church for a while because he suspected the pastor was onto him. The pastor felt uneasy around Richard Huckle and, you know, like just about the whole situation in general, since it wasn't clear who the children were, who their parents were, you know, but it was evident that these kids were from poor areas. And, you know, eventually Richard returned to the church, still bringing more kids without their parents. And, you know, the pastor didn't have any proof, so he didn't think there was anything else he could do. Richard's online presence was very active. You know, like I said, he was an avid social media user. His main username was Huck Cool, HuckCool, Huckool. I bet he felt really fucking cool when he thought that one up. So he spent a lot of time commenting on forums and pictures that people would post of travel pages. He mostly commented on, I don't know how the legality of it works, but legal pictures of nude or mostly nude children. The way I understand it is that it's legal, you know, some photos are legal because they're being used as a way to document life in impoverished countries. You know, like I said, I'm not sure exactly how it works, but if somebody could actually help me understand that, that would be great. You can reach out at the hookedoncrimepod@gmail.com email, facebook.com/hookedoncrimepod. We have a message button there. I really am confused on how the, you know, there's a legality of posting pictures online of children that are nude or partially nude. But anyway, aside from that, you know, he would leave comments that were inappropriate. And he, you know, he was very active in the dark web community for pedophiles. One of these places was called the Love Zone. I don't understand why they call these places that. It was called the Love Zone. He shared pictures and stories about how he would abuse victims. Some he had abused for years. One young girl was his victim from the ages of 5 to 12. And he commented about her on the forums of the site, saying it was, quote, quite amazing to have slept with the same child lover for so many years. And I hope from the images you have seen and enjoyed watching her grow. In the same post, he said, it's not often in child porn that you can compare the bodies of a 5-year-old and a 12-year-old that are the same girl. I'm sure I will have plenty more sex with her in the future. And in another post, he talked about how he abused 4 little girls from the same family. In yet another post, he said he hit the jackpot with a 3-year-old girl who is as loyal to me as my dog, and no one seems to care. He even says that the 3-year-old, he said, I can have so much sex with the 3-year-old that it's boring. And he used a tongue sticking out emoji. He talks about how impoverished kids are definitely much easier to seduce, which is not the word we should use, than middle class Western children. Like, you aren't seducing these kids, you're abusing them and leaving them with lifelong trauma. And okay, I'm gonna try and rein it in. He wrote a 60-page manual called Pedophiles in Poverty, a Child Lover Guide. It gave step-by-step instructions on how to find and gain the trust of and abuse children in Asia and not to get caught. He said he wanted to earn money as a pedophile by traveling around, taking photos and videos of himself abusing children and selling them. He even signed up for a crowdfunding site called PedoFunding. This site was the best method for child porn producers to sell child porn, because before, it was nearly impossible to make professional grade content. God. Because as soon as they sell it, you know, one scumbag posts it all over the dark web. the user agreement said children need to consent to the sex acts and had to be over the age of 3. Children can't consent to sex acts. Like, children are not informed, and children are young and innocent, and this is just so fucking wrong. And the site was crowdfunded by Bitcoins in exchange for child porn, and everyone bid, and you know, everyone who bid, they got a copy of this shit, but the pedo funding got a 22% commission. What the fuck? Richard earned a lot of money on a photo series he did of him raping a 3-year-old girl. Pedo funding was permanently shut down in 2014 on the, you know, dark web websites and forums. Inactive members are like required to, you know, upload a minimum amount of content over a certain period of time to stay in communities. He was still out there just posting all of this stuff. Richard Huckle made up a scoring system to rate the children he abused, and he shared it with his pedo buddies. And based on a quote depravity scale, was how you earned pedo points ranging from 1 to 15. It's based on the sex acts he forced on children. And in 1 year, he gave himself 1,305 pedo points. How? You're not unlocking a fucking achievement on Xbox. You're ruining people's lives. It's not a game. It's not a fucking game. Like, just... Okay. Sorry. In 2013, he had a very detailed plan on how he was going to marry a girl he had abused since she was 7. He planned on having kids with her, originally to create his own victims. But, you know, he decided he wasn't into incest. And so he changed his plans and decided that he would adopt. And so instead of marrying this child, he was going to marry a South Asian woman. And he figured that, you know, she would just allow him to abuse these foster children or adopted children whenever he wanted. So, you know, like, being a foster parent would just be a revolving door of victims for him. He's just so fucking vile. Like, I'm trying very hard to try and keep it together. Serial rape is not a game. Traumatizing children is not a game. He would still get children alone by taking them for day trips and out for their birthdays. One 5-year-old girl he took out for her birthday wasn't taken anywhere fun. She was taken back to Huckle's apartment and subjected to hours of abuse, in which he bragged about. He bragged about all the abuse on the Love Zone. He basically said that, you know, though she wasn't happy about the abuse, it was a small price to pay when no one else is interested in celebrating your birthday. What the fuck? He offered to make promotional material for an orphanage in India. He emailed the pastor there, and they let him come out, and he stayed in the pastor's home while he was there. He didn't talk about his personal life with anybody, really. And the orphanage that he actually, you know, did some promotional work for, they posted a thank you note to Richard on their Facebook page. And, you know, he messaged the pastor about going back, but he wasn't able to go back, thankfully. A gal named Ann Jones says that Huckle could have been stopped during his gap year in 2006. She worked for World Challenge, the company that arranged his travel plans for his gap year challenge. And, you know, he would work that year for that company when he worked at the church. Basically, all the stuff that he did on his gap year thing was you know, handled by them. Anne said that Richard was a troublemaker. He was always dirty. He was never put together. He gave her uneasy feelings. Richard had requested working in an orphanage, so Anne had him set up to work in, you know, this aforementioned school that I had talked about before. During his time, he stayed with four roommates that were also in the program, and one of the roommates worked in the same class as Richard, and she said he gave her the creeps, that he was weird around the kids, and, you know, she wanted to just give him the benefit of the doubt. She said he was quiet and didn't interact with anyone. He always had a camera and would always take pictures instead of teach, and she got fed up with it because, you know, she's doing all the teaching work. So she reported him and he was asked to leave, and he told Anne he was a Christian and he wanted to work in a church. So she placed him in one and he quickly became Sunday school teacher. But a parent complained that Richard smacked a child and was very rough with the other kids, and the parents wanted him gone and he was booted from the church and the program. But somehow he was back in the program within a week. So that's how he ended up going on with everything that he did. In 2014, you know, a specialized branch of the, Australia's Queensland's Police Service called Task Force Argos were scoping out the Love Zone, and they noticed a poster who always started his messages with the greeting, "Hiyas," and had a distinctive freckle on one of his fingers. Eventually, officers fell down a rabbit hole that ends with Shannon McCool, a care worker from Adelaide, Australia, being arrested. And when the cops entered his house to get him, he was actually online and running the Love Zone at the same time. So this McCool guy was the creator of the site. And police, they took it over. And they pretended to be him and used the site to catch other swamp rats that were, you know, doing this. So while they did this, they actually were able to save 85 children from ongoing abuse. And they arrested hundreds of pedophiles. One member of the site really stood out to investigators due to the number of kids he abused and the cockiness of his posts. You know, police figured out Richard's identity because of this. Like, they really dug into him. And they started following him on other websites and other social medias. And they learned from a Facebook post that Richard was coming home for Christmas. So Argos alerted Britain's National Crime Agency, and he was arrested on December 19th, 2014 at Gatwick Airport. He was questioned and they searched his phone and his laptop and other devices and found 29 victims and over 20,000 pictures and videos. And it's believed he could have up to or over 200 victims. Huckle never said anything, and he refused to help because he, you know, just, he wouldn't help. He was a dick. He had no criminal record, and he was working with kids. Because he wasn't working with kids at the time, and he had no criminal record. He was released on bail into his parents' care. So, you know, his mom finds out about all these charges, obviously, and she confronts him. And, you know, one thing I have to say about Christine and Edwin Huckle, they have a lot of respect for me, or from me. They really fucking do. So Christine confronts him and she's like, "What did you do? Tell me." So he admits to everything. And his parents called the cops and told him to come get him. Soon after, they sold their home and they moved and they went into hiding because they didn't want to be associated with Richard. His sister-in-law actually told the media no one wanted to see him, no one talks about him, and no one wants to see him again or have anything to do with him. There are so many parents, like, you know, we've seen Chris Watt's parents that were like, "Oh, but that's our baby." No, No, I have mad respect for Mr. and Mrs. Huckle. So in January 2016, Huckle pleads, of course, not guilty, to all of the charges against him. And there were so many charges, it took over an hour to read all of them. The prosecution were actually preparing for three separate trials because they didn't think that one jury should be subjected to all of the graphic and horrific evidence against him in court. Think about that for a second. They were going to try and do three separate trials because the shit this guy had was so horrific. So, fast forward to April 2016, and during a preliminary trial hearing, Huckle requested to see the evidence against him because he didn't think they actually had that much. But then he was like, well, shit. So, he ended up pleading guilty to 71 charges, and the prosecutors were okay with that. And so, you know, they didn't pursue the other charges, and all of this spared a jury from seeing all of the abuse material, and all of it guaranteed a lengthy sentence, but the additional charges still stayed in his file. So on June 6th, 2016, Huckle receives 2+ life sentences, with a minimum term of 25 years before being eligible for parole. Or no, I'm sorry, it wasn't 2+, it was 22 life sentences. Like I said, my fucking handwriting, y'all, horrible. But yeah, 22 life sentences with a minimum term of 25 years before being eligible for parole. He had the audacity to sit with his hands folded in prayer during sentencing. I'm pretty sure he was still trying to pretend like he's a good Christian boy, but I doubt if, you know, if there is truly a God out there, that they are ever going to welcome him or forgive him. And if he was welcomed to heaven, like they say, you can just repent for your sins and then, you know, go to heaven. I don't think he should be let in. I think he should burn in fucking hell. Malaysian government came under fire for the lack of child abuse and pornography laws that Malaysia and, you know, like they just don't have the laws out there that are needed. Malaysia and the UK pointed fingers at each other about how all of the Huckle situation was handled. But aside from that, you know, the story does have an interesting ending. On October 13th, 2019, Richard Huckle was found in a pool of his own blood in a cell at Full Sutton Prison. I can't say I'm sad about that because I'm not. Paul Fitzgerald was serving an indeterminate sentence for serious sexual assault and was found by another inmate straddling Huckle's corpse while strangling him. Huckle's feet and hands had been bound, and he was found face down. Sorry. Autopsy showed that Huckle died due to strangulation by an electrical cable that was wrapped around his throat. He was anally raped with a kitchen implement. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by that, but alrighty. Fitzgerald tortured Huckle for almost an hour and a half. Fitzgerald smashed Huckle's head against the floor 6 or 7 times and shoved a pen that had a blade attached to it up his nose and into his brain before he died. Fitzgerald said he wanted to cut up and cook and eat Huckle, but he was stopped before he could, so yeah. Paul Fitzgerald was sentenced to 34 years for murdering Huckle in 2020, and this guy's fucking crazy. But honestly, I just can't help but to see the poetic justice of it all. And yeah, I'm glad that Huckle's dead. I really am, because he can't hurt anyone else, and hopefully it brings his victims some sense of safety or, you know, just helps them work through their trauma. It's not gonna erase it, but hopefully they can feel a little bit safer. And yeah, that's the end of it. It's the end of the Monsters in the Dark series, and I won't say I hope you enjoyed it, but I do hope that it shed some light on things that happen to children and the online presence that predators have. And it help, you know, we can find a way to help keep all of the kids safe Please donate to Thorn. Thorn.org is amazing. Seriously, donate to them. Go on that website, learn everything you can. And y'all stay safe and get to hooking. We will see you next week with another episode. Bye.